Once again, I'd like to welcome you if you're just tuning in to the Keith Harris Show Global Network right here on Hotline Radio. Now, we have on the phone the, in my opinion, the boss of daytime television. This man would need no introduction if you were standing in front of him, but he has been in over 120 prime time television series and feature films. He's the boss on television, Emmy Award winning, People's Choice Award winning, Eric Braeden. How you doing there, sir?
Keith, how you doing?
I'm doing wonderful, as a matter of fact. I'm doing great. What have you start out with? How's your day been so far, Eric?
we had rain in Los Angeles, which is wonderful news. We need it desperately, and otherwise, what can I tell you? Went to work, and read the New York Times this morning, and went to work, and now I'm on the phone with you. What can I tell you?
I know that's right. A basic day, in other words.
Well, no, but it changes from day to day.
Understandable.
Yeah.
Okay, To start out, first of all, you're originally from Germany, right?
Sorry,
yeah. To start, you're originally from Germany?
Right.
Okay. And you came to America at what age?
At the age of 18. I just turned 18.
Oh, okay. You just turned 18. Now, before you came to America, you were playing soccer, right? Like, you love sports.
No. Soccer as well, but the most important thing then was track and field. Okay. Discus and javelin and shot put. And I won the German Youth Championship in 1958.
Okay, and so you were still in Germany then, right?
Precisely.
Oh, okay. Yeah, and then now, do you remember? When you came to America, what the political climate was like in Germany at the time? Yes.
It was after the Second World War. It was Germany had become a country in 1949. After the Second World War and the Federal Republic, and there was a democracy. Mm-hmm. And was hello.
Yes, I'm here.
Okay. It was in the throes of recovering after the Second World War. You know.
Okay. All right. So
it was a totally destroyed country.
Oh, all right. Now, did that...
The city in which I grew up was 96% destroyed.
Oh, wow.
Right. Wow. They threw 500,000 bombs over the city.
Oh, my goodness.
The city's called Kiel, K-I-E-L, up in northern Germany, north of Hamburg.
Okay. Did that have... How much influence did that have on you? Sure. Sure. Now, how much influence did that disaster happening in Germany? How much influence did that have on you coming to America?
Well, it had some. Yeah, I don't know what the noise is in between. Mm-hmm. It had some influence, obviously. It was a tough time going out to Germany after the war, and. I was offered to come to this country by a cousin who had come to America in the early 50s. She was a doctor at the Medical University of Texas in Galveston. And I jumped on it and said, let's go.
All right.
A promised adventure. I read a lot of stuff about America, a lot of books about the American West. We had, after the war, obviously, we listened to Elvis Presley, we listened to Louis Armstrong, we listened to Lionel Hampton. Some of the top athletes, obviously, were Americans, and in my case, was Perry O'Brien, the shot putter, mm-hmm. but a lot of black athletes, for example, Aaron Richardson, etc. Mm-hmm. And so, America was just sort of, you know, it was the embodiment of adventure.
Right. And by you having family members over here, I guess that made it somewhat more comfortable coming over. I know, you know, in my move into a different country, which was only Canada from America, not that huge. But, you know, when I first got there, for me, it was like...
Keith, I said again, the connection's not very good, but I'm trying again.
Oh, okay. Now, can you hear me better, Eric?
Yeah.
Okay. Now, you know, the transition, like myself moving from one country to another, which was only America to Canada, for instance, but, you know... when I first moved, it was a bit difficult because I didn't know anyone.
Where'd you move from?
I moved from the United States, as a matter of fact. I'm back in America, but I moved from the United States, really just over the border to Canada, but it was another country and I wasn't a citizen. And so, going through the motions of, getting used to meeting people, just kind of finding my way and different things like that, was difficult. Like how hard or easy was the transition for you?
That's a good question. It in some ways easy, in some ways not. I would say the most shocking thing was in 59 in May of 59 end of May, beginning of June, I took the Greyhound bus from New York to Galveston, Texas, and we traveled in the South, and the racism was unbelievable. I mean, I was absolutely shocked by the blatancy of it, and that is what stuck mostly in my mind, because obviously in Europe, what I'd heard, or post-war Germany, what I'd heard of the democracy in America, and yet I drove to the South from New York all the way down to Texas in the Greyhound bus, and I saw signs everywhere separating blacks from whites, or at that time colors from whites, and I must say it was rather shocking.
Right. Yeah, I can imagine, coming to a place that, everybody at the...
It wasn't much different than the North either. I later on had a scholarship at the University of Montana in Missoula, a track scholarship, and there was one black football player on the football team. And I remember he had difficulty going to the bars after games or whatever. So I don't think it was very different than the North. That's all bullshit when they say it wasn't as obviously blatant as it was in the South. But don't tell me the North was free of racism. It was not.
You're right. You're right, as a matter of fact, Eric. A lot of people do have that disbelief, have that misunderstanding, as a matter of fact. So now, how long was it after attending school or while you were in university did you start acting?
I came to LA in 1960, in the fall of 60. By about 61, 62, I started acting.
Okay. Can you remember what your first role you ever played was? I know you've been in so many, but...
Yeah, I've been in quite a few. The first one was a dreadful film called Operation Eichmann. It was when they had caught Adolf Eichmann in Argentina. And Werner Klemper, who was later on Colonel Klink and Hogan's Heroes, played Eichmann. And I played one of the henchmen. And that was my first role.
Okay. Now...
The film was not very good.
All right. Now, a lot of people, did you know when you got into acting, Eric, like did you already want to get into it or did you get into it and then manage to go so far? Like, how did that?
Well, I somewhat played with the idea. I was offered a role in a play at the University of Montana. I had been played by Chekhov, and I couldn't do it because I was working at night. From 6 to 2 in the morning, I worked at a lumber mill, and then my first lecture was at 8, so I had no time to rehearse the play. But I was offered the role, and I was often asked to read poetry aloud, and so there was a kind of sort of maybe a leaning towards it a little bit. I was fascinated by it a little bit, and I was fascinated by certain characters and certain plays, and seeing Hamlet for the first time really struck a chord within me, and then I saw Richard III, and that was another very strong influence, and then, of course, the time, Marlon Brando films.
Right.
And he played Mark Anthony in a play by Shakespeare called Julius Caesar. And then on the waterfront. There are certain influences that obviously that culminated in me thinking about it more strongly.
Right.
And when I first did it, I really, I struck something in me that made me continue in that profession. I knew I was in the right profession. I instinctively knew it.
Okay. Now, have you, the roles you played, so many different roles that you have played, have you noticed that, have they been mostly the more straight-faced, serious kind of roles, or have you ever?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, unfortunately.
Right.
I'd love to do comedy.
Yeah, I could see that because I could see that you have a sense of humor, but I mean, hey, you know, you've done great playing the bossy figure and things like that. And let me ask you, are you that much far off than your character is Victor Newman, I'll ask? Because listen, I've watched interviews with you, Eric, and you know, I've studied you, and you're serious, you're about politics. And your focus just in your everyday life, and that's not far off from the character you role. Do you play that role so well because that's partly you?
Yes and no. That's a good question and a very difficult question to answer because the number of things that Victor Newman does that I couldn't care less about. So I would have a much better relationship with my family, and certainly with my kids. And if a kid acted as ungratefully as St. Nicholas does, I would kick him in the ass and say, "Get out." In other words, I couldn't tolerate that kind of a small behavior. But then, would I personally do some of the things Victor does? No. But there are some similarities.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, I don't take any shit in real life either. So you come at me with respect, I treat you respectfully. You come at me with disrespect, I come after you. I don't give a damn who it is. That has been the case with me from the very beginning. That has never changed. So do we have things in common? Yeah, in a sense, the emotional reactions to some things are similar, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Yet there are so many things Victor Newman does that I personally have no interest in.
Okay. Right.
Yeah.
You know what? I like that answer you gave it. Look, it's an honest answer that any manly man would really give, Eric. So
it's a very difficult to answer because you obviously, when you act, you take out of, you steal out of your own background,
mm-hmm.
Certain moments and certain emotional happenings in your life that you then draw from.
Mm-hmm.
And so, do you understand? It one's own experience blends over into what you put into the character. So, in that sense, there are similarities.
Okay. Now, you've seen generations change in the media, Eric.
I said you've seen
you've been in the media for a while and you've seen generation change and things like that.
I've been in the media for 52 years.
Exactly, 50 years over. Right. So that's why I know that this question is a good one to get your input about. What do you, social media nowadays and just the internet, social media, everybody's online, a lot of different things like that. Do you think, I know there's two sides to that, but Do you think it weighs out? Do you see that there's some sort of negative and a positive towards it? I mean, I do.
I think generally speaking, I think it's positive, don't you?
Yeah.
I mean, it's we obviously, in other words, people can't hide as much anymore as they used to.
Yeah.
That goes, for personalities in all kinds of fields, and most importantly in the field of politics. Although the bullshit seems to fly hot and heavy out of Washington, D.C., in spite of social media. But I think, generally speaking, the information one gets, at least one has a chance to filter out the truth from bullshit. So I think the social media certainly have contributed to that. We now know what's going on in various parts of the world, and we know it almost instantaneously. Is that for the better? Only time will tell. I think it probably is. On the other hand, you could also say that people are no longer able to reflect as much privately and quietly. They're constantly, digressing because they're always paying attention to whatever comes across either their texts or Facebooks or YouTube or whatever it is. That is good and bad. Generally speaking, I would think it has always been for the better. Mm-hmm. I mean, you must remember, I grew up at a time when we had no television.
Right.
You know, we listened to the radio. And that was obviously highly controlled.
Yeah.
And so there was television in this country and radio in this country for many years after the war. That has all changed now. And I think for the better.
Yeah, I would agree. I think there's two sides to it as well. You made a good point, as a matter of fact, about people not really being able to hide as much. I hadn't really thought about that side. Because you see the side where social media kind of delves into people's personal lives a whole lot. But at the same time, I guess some people need their personal lives delve into, as you say, so that they can't have behind closed doors as much. Absolutely. Absolutely. To talk about that, you've won a numerous amount of awards, so this is probably a bit old to you, but the Emmys, okay? You were nominated for 7 Emmys and you won your Emmy in 1998.
I've stayed out of the Emmy thing for a long time. And the reason is that the way by which the nominations were made, I think, to me was became very, very bad. In other words, the initial nomination came from within your working group of actors, within your company, within our show, for example.
Oh.
And that then becomes a popularity contest. You understand? And I don't give a damn whether someone likes me or not. I couldn't care less.
Right.
But there are some people who literally would campaign for it. I understand it's okay. I'm not that kind. I stayed out of the Emmys for a long time,
mm-hmm.
and still I'm staying out of it because the mode by which they select people has not changed. There should be an outside, totally independent group looking at your work that you should submit. It should not be, the first nomination should not be from within your own group. That becomes
bias, right?
Of course, it's a popularity contest.
Yeah, and that's interesting because I didn't know that. I think a lot of people out there didn't know that. Like, we thought that it was something that really the people decided on.
No, I think the only really objective prize I think is the People's Choice Award. I think that apparently truly goes out to the people.
Right.
And that I respect. I received one. It's the only time that Daytime was involved in it. I received it, and Sue Spitchy received it, and that I'm extremely proud of. The rest is too political for me. You know, unless there's an objective outside group that judges your work, I don't want any part of it.
Right, I understand. Now, you, in 2004, you joined the Prime Minister Ariel, correct me if I'm saying her name wrong, but saying the name wrong, Ariel Sharon of Israel.
Well, it was Ariel Sharon of Israel, and the other gentleman was Shimon Peres, the president of Israel. Anyway, go on.
And you know, for the conference in Israel now. So you are still obviously involved with a lot of actions and things like that in other countries. You know, like Israel and Germany and things of that nature. Right. So you stand behind humanitarianism and you support.
Let me make that simply put it this way.
Yeah.
As a German of my generation, I obviously am deeply and bitterly aware of the legacy of the Holocaust and the Second World War. Mm-hmm. Becoming aware of that growing up in post-war Germany, you become aware of it rather painfully, of what your older generation was part of. And it makes you politically very astute and very aware, and it makes you feel that we have an enormous responsibility to make sure that these things aren't repeated,
right.
And that any kind of injustices in the world are being corrected. Mm-hmm. And so it is my heritage that obviously made me painfully aware of a lot of injustices in the world, you know, and when you look at America, obviously, and you look at 300 years of discrimination, that's an outrage.
Yeah.
And so what happened in Germany during the Second World War is an outrage of incredible proportions. So obviously, as a young German, I will always support Israel, whether I agree or disagree with some of their policies. Fundamentally, I agree with the existence of Israel because it is a direct product of the Holocaust. Mm-hmm. And so I understand it, and I will always be in support of it.
Right.
But I will be in support of human rights wherever there's a need for them.
You know what? That's good. That's great. As a matter of fact, you know, with a man of your stature actually sticking up and speaking out in those ways, a lot more of that is needed. What position do you feel like we're in as Americans these days? Just in general.
Well, I think in general we have. I came here at the age of 18 and very consciously saw an enormous change in race relations in this country. They certainly have not been improved as much as they can be improved, but they have nevertheless become better, exponentially better.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, when I compare this with what happened in the South in 1959, 1960, the difference is enormous difference. A lot of improvements have to be made, but the difference is enormous. Anyone who claims otherwise is full of shit and doesn't know his own history. I mean, you could not in the South go to certain restaurants if you were black.
No.
You could not associate with whites. That applies to, by the way, to restaurants in the North as well.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, how long did it take to 1965 to have a Voting Rights Act in this country? Give me a break.
Yeah.
That's until 1965. That's extraordinary. We now take it for granted. But now they're trying to, you know, redistrict voting areas, etc., in order to perpetuate certain kind of discrimination. They're still trying.
Yeah.
Obviously, the injustices that occur in some communities where you have you know, a lot of the black community complains about being treated in a condescending fashion, at best, if not in a very outrageous fashion, by the police forces in some communities.
Yeah.
But I'm sure that has improved as well in some communities. But now we just saw Ferguson.
Yeah.
I still don't know what really happened there. So in spite of modern communications, we don't really know exactly what happened, how it was provoked.
Right.
In other words, I would like to know how a young black man goes up to a cop car and hits a cop. And I mean, it sort of defies logic to me.
Me too.
Why would he do that? He must have been prompted. In other words, father goes up to a cop car and hits the cop in the car. Something must have gone down.
Yeah.
And I still don't know what it was.
Right.
We still don't know the truth about that.
Right. And even...
So, yeah.
Sorry. And even, you know, and even in a situation like that, for, you know, to be shot that many times from a distance away, it just still seems a bit...
It's you know, the Trayvon, what is that other story in Florida? What was that character again that
wanted to be... you mean Trayvon Martin.
Who killed that young teenage boy.
Yeah.
That's outrageous. That son of a bitch is running around. It's just unbelievable.
Yeah.
So, that kind of thing happens, but, you know, it's... I can tell you, and this may sound strange, but I remember times in L.A. where cops were not particularly friendly with a lot of white people.
Right.
I can vouch for that. So it is, but then you have to understand cops, who obviously feel that they're in a siege mentality, that no matter what they do, they're being criticized. It's a very complex issue. But I'm certain that blacks are more subject to, you know, the
difference
prejudices of certain groups and certain law enforcement agencies than whites are. I've no doubt in my mind about that. But those things have also changed, have also become better over the years. Over the 55 years I've been in this country, they have become better. Look, if race relations don't work in America, they won't work anywhere. Not anywhere in the world. I've always said that.
Yeah, and is that...
Everyone in the world is looking at this country, and I think race relations have improved exponentially in this country. So I hope, yes, absolutely. I think improvements have been made. No doubt in my mind about it.
Right.
But we have a ways to go.
Right. And kind of touching on that point, too, You will be in Little Rock, Arkansas, as a matter of fact, on Martin Luther King's Day as well, right. Speaking, right?
Right.
Okay.
Right.
All right.
Exactly.
I see what you're saying. Yeah, you know, and, you know, we'll, you know, just to bring that up, because as a matter of fact, I've spent some time in the South, and I'm in the South now. I've been down here for a few years, and it still amazed me, because I'm kind of a history buff myself, and it still amazed me that today, I still go to restaurants that, you know, maybe 30, and I'm 40 now, but, you know, maybe 30 years ago that blacks were not even allowed to go into the front door. And so for me, you know, when I go into these places, it's like, it's a history thing to me, and it's a real shock. And sometimes I wonder how the people still, you know, kind of deal with it, or what feeling do they get when they go places and, you know, spend money days now that they know they weren't allowed to. But like you say, things have changed dramatically when you compare it to what used to happen, though, right?
Oh my God, yes.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Super.
Anyone who claims otherwise doesn't know the history.
Right. Now, going back to the acting a bit, do you think, okay, do you feel as though, you know, you've taken on the role that you have for so many years as Victor Newman, can you see yourself ever playing a different leading role, or do you think this is where you need to be and this is where you're going to stay?
To give you a very honest answer, if there were a number of offers to do, let's say, Star Films or Star Another Nighttime Series, I certainly would consider that, yes. But I'm very happy with where I am. I'm very happy with playing that character.
Right.
Very.
Yeah.
It has been, it constantly changes somewhat from day to day, and it's an enormous challenge to learn that much dialogue every day, and then to deliver it as faithfully and as realistically as you can. Mm-hmm. I've never tired of that. So I'm very grateful to the role, and very grateful to the show.
Right. To me, I couldn't see anyone else playing the role, to be honest with you.
I have no idea. Hopefully it doesn't come to that.
I know that's right.
All right.
You received a star. You received a star. Was it on the the Walk of Fame. Where was it started?
Walk of Fame. Right?
Yeah. And how long ago was that?
Let's see. Almost 6-7 years ago.
I think
something like that.
Okay. And let me ask you, with these awards, because like you say, you're a man of pretty much just, you know, you really care about general life and just the things that happen around you, a people's person. When it comes to these awards, as you say, you know, do they really hit you that hard? I know you appreciate getting them. You're thankful and grateful. But
there are two awards that meant a lot to me. And that is the People's Choice Award that meant a hell of a lot to me. Mm-hmm. And the Star in the Hollywood Walk of Fame meant a great deal to me. I'll tell you why. I came to the stand without a penny in my pocket.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? I worked for moving furniture companies and worked as a dishwasher in restaurants, etc., etc. So to stand there quite a few years later, on Hollywood Boulevard, and George Kennedy was there, and Kenny Norton, the former heavyweight champion who unfortunately died, was there, mm-hmm. and Jesse Ventura, who's a friend, was there, and they were all there to give speeches. When I received that star, and I obviously couldn't help but reflect back on the times when I came to LA, didn't know so. This town is a tough town.
Mm-hmm.
You don't realize it. There are 150,000 registered actors in this town.
Wow.
And then if you're one of the few, well, less than 1% who make it, as I have, when you stand there and you reflect upon that, it becomes almost overwhelming. But I now know that my granddaughter can drive by there, my granddaughters, and say, see, that's where Oprah has a star. it was very moving, primarily because it speeches were given by George Kennedy, who I respect enormously, and who was in a film with me called The Man Who Came Back that I put together, and Kenny Norton and Jesse Ventura, who I respect a great deal, and my family and co-stars. It was one of the most moving experiences of my life.
Wow. I can imagine, because at the same time, it's a legacy, as you say, for, you know, for your grandchildren and so on.
That's right.
Right. Now, do you feel like in today's circumstances, that it is important for the young youth coming up to, you know, just in the job market that we're in right now and things like that? How important do you think it is for youngins coming up to learn how to start their own businesses or take more business courses since there are less job opportunities? You think that's an important field?
That is important, but I think that is even more important, educationally speaking,
mm-hmm.
is to emulate more the system we have in Germany. And that is that as you graduate from high school, you don't necessarily immediately have to go to college. There's pressure. Not everyone is qualified to go to college and shouldn't be. What you should, however, do is you should enter a profession, and then you enter professional schools in mechanics, in carpentry, in whatever it is. So you become an apprentice in someone's business, and then twice a week you go to school. You learn about that business. It's the apprentice system, which I think is great. And then you really fundamentally learn about the profession you're in, and it definitely knows what it is. And then you eventually graduate from that school, and you graduate from the company in which you work. You then receive a certain degree, and you get correspondingly more money. And or, obviously, if you are very bad, then you go to college. But why force anyone to college? What bullshit is that? It's just nonsense.
Right.
Learn the profession and really learn it. Really know it. Why do you think we have so many immigrants come to this country from the south of the border? Because they're doing all the jobs that the Americans were not taught to do. That's really what it boils down to.
You know what? You're right. You're right.
Yes, of course.
And a lot.
Yeah, that whole hypocrisy about people coming across the border. Well, listen, the infrastructure in LA alone would probably suffer enormously if we sent them all back. Because these immigrants, legal or illegal, do most of the work.
Yeah.
And they certainly do most of the work in agriculture, not only in California. California produces more farm goods than any other state in America, by the way.
Mm-hmm.
It ain't La La Land. This is, California is a place where people work very hard.
Right.
And La La Land, bullshit, I don't know who came up with that. This is not La La Land. You work very hard here.
Mm-hmm.
So all these laborers who have come for decades to work on the huge farm belt in the Central Valley in California,
mm-hmm.
who help put produce on the table of Americans all across this country. The restaurant business,
mm-hmm.
the clothing business, the mechanic shop, it goes on and on. The carpenters who build the houses. I mean, look at who they mostly are.
Yeah.
They're mostly Latins.
This is true. You're right.
So, in other words, what I'm saying is, why don't we have vocational schools attached to our high schools and our community colleges or whatever, so that people can learn both at the same time. They learn the practical ways of their profession, whatever it is,
mm-hmm.
and then they go to school, they learn about it academically, twice a week, for example.
Yeah.
That's a sensible system. This bullshit that everyone has to go to the university, what nonsense.
Right.
But everyone is qualified to do so.
Right. And then everybody's coming out. A lot of people coming out of university all learning the same skill, the few basic, you know, things go for.
Most of learning no skill.
Right. No skill that we're using.
You don't learn the skill per se.
Yeah.
You know, you obviously learn to think and all that. That's a different story.
Right.
obviously, people who are qualified intellectually should go to university. No two ways about that.
Mm-hmm.
But the real practical skills that most people need to learn should be taught in the latter 2 years of high school and community college, for example.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Yeah. No, I agree with you. Now, on the and also it gives people from, you know, I agree with it also because it gives people in other countries that are looking for better ways or trying to raise their families better who want to come to a country and be able. Listen, everybody deserves an opportunity to help their generations progress and to grow on. And so I agree. I just feel like it's a bit wrong if, you know, they come and they work hard and do these skills. Why? You know, it's not fair to turn them around and send them back to something.
Well, let me say something about that. This is you must remember I'm an immigrant.
Right.
And I know how difficult it is to come here from Europe.
Mm-hmm.
It's increasingly more difficult. Okay, you have to jump through all kinds of hoops to come here now. It ain't easy to come from Europe to America. It's not.
Right.
So, when you look at it from the perspective of an immigrant who, you know, stood in line at the consulate in Germany, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, to get his papers to come to this country. And then, obviously, part of you says, wait a minute, why are people allowed to become citizens now who came here illegally, who didn't jump through those hoops? That is the other side of that argument. I am for what Obama is doing as far as immigration is concerned, because obviously no one else has offered a solution. It's a partial solution to a difficult problem.
Right.
But part of me says, wait a minute, if you want to be come into this country, you should come into this country legally. So, and yet I also know that a lot of American businesses have encouraged illegal immigration because you don't have to pay them as much, you don't have to pay all the welfare costs, etc., etc.
Mm-hmm.
Agriculture in this country, primarily in California, would go broke without the migrants coming here every year.
Yeah.
By the hundreds of thousands. Most of the time, the people who come here obviously serve the economy, the American economy. So I understand Obama's argument that you need to reward that.
Right.
On the other hand, you must also realize that we allowed that illegal immigration for a long time. Why? Because it was a safety valve to release the revolutionary potential in Mexico and all the Central American countries, where the discrepancy between wealthy and poor is so enormous that we were also afraid that it would blow up like Cuba did.
Oh.
We didn't want a socialist or communist revolution south of the border. So we allowed a lot of people to come, you know, with one eye closed, to come in here and make a living.
Right.
Because had they stayed in Mexico and Central America, I guarantee you there would have been a revolution. So this whole so-called problem of illegal immigration, you have to look at it from all sides. Mm-hmm. You also have to look at it as a foreign policy decision to release the revolutionary potential in those countries. Okay. Understand?
Yeah.
We opened the borders, or we certainly had, it was porous enough for a lot of people who were very desperately poor and who came to America instead of starting a revolution in their own country.
That, you know what? Right, because that released a lot of tension, as you said.
Of course. Mm. Think about it.
Yeah. Now,
it's just, think about it from all sides. It's a very complex issue. But at least Obama is doing something about it.
Yeah, that's true. And then the next thing would have known you what would have happened as soon as the revolution would have started, then we'd have been sending more American troops to go get killed in these wars.
Yeah.
Yeah. And all around that's bad. Now, I'll tell you, I am all for the legalization of marijuana. What do you think, Eric?
From what I know, yeah, legalize the damn thing. You know? From what I hear, I just heard a big thing the other night on Sanjay Gupta on CNN, and he investigated from all sides. I think we should just allow research to be done with it. Apparently, it has some medicinal advantages and applications, and I think we should investigate that. Don't tell me that there's any worse than the pharmaceuticals that we are being fed by regular doctors. So I think it should be studied, should be legalized. I personally think another hypocrisy should be done away with, and that is steroids in sports.
Oh, wow.
It's, in other words, we all know it exists. In other words, you don't create these mammoth bodies without some help. And what we should do, instead of condemning it completely, we should say, wait a minute, let's study it. Mm-hmm. Let's study when it is too much, and let us study when it might help, and it's not too much.
Right.
Because I venture to say that it is still prevalent in all performance sports where you need a lot of power, be it track and field, be it in football, be it in baseball. It's happening. It has happened for decades.
Okay.
To say otherwise is hypocritical. And we need to, I think one should simply say, okay, let's look at it. Let's look at, and let us tell athletes beforehand, have an open book about it and say, listen, if you take this much steroids, you'll have liver disease, you'll have heart disease, you'll have osteoporosis, you have joint disease, et cetera, et cetera.
Mm-hmm.
Okay?
Right.
So if you take this much, however, it might simply help you recover more easily when you train hard, et cetera.
Right.
Now, apparently, there's also, you know, that they smoke pot after football games. Well, watching a football game, I marvel at how hard these guys hit each other. Are you kidding? Having been in sports all my life, I know, and never having played football, I can only imagine how tough that is.
Right.
So you're aging and pruning. And don't tell me that a lot of them aren't smoking joints afterwards to relieve the pain.
Of course, yes.
Of course. And if that is good, what's wrong with it?
Mm.
In other words, let's stop being so hypocritical about all this. Let us simply put it under scientific microscope and say, okay, let us research what the effects are.
Yeah. And you know the other side to that is too, also, Eric, you know, like you say, they put so much restrictions on that. But then when a lot of these athletes get hurt in games and they really want them to come back, they pretty much just juice them up, you know,
with all kinds of pain medication.
Right. And then send them back anyway.
Which is addictive.
Right.
And they send them back in. I mean, it's the hypocrisy is so rampant, I can't stand it. Just be open about it.
Mm-hmm.
Say, okay, what works? What doesn't work? Does, if you use pot, does it have more deleterious consequences than some pharmaceutical? painkillers. Let's find out about it.
Yeah.
Stop the mystery.
Absolutely.
Look, the example is very simple. Think of a high school football player who is now 16, 17, you know, there's a potential that if he weighs a bit more, he could become an offensive lineman at the University of Alabama or UCLA or USC or Stanford. Or imagine that.
Right.
You have a four-year ride, free ride. Most of these guys come from financially, you know, stressed backgrounds. So if some university offers them a free ride for 4 years or whatever, that's a godsend. So would you then not, as a father, say, wait a minute. If I give him a little, if he gets a little steroids or whatever it is, HGH, he will pull on more pounds, he'll become stronger, and his chances of getting a scholarship at some of the top universities are so much bigger.
Mm.
What would you do?
Yeah.
So, why should we not subject that to scientific scrutiny and say, if you take this much, it's okay. If you take that much, it is too much for you. And you will reap the bitter fruits of it later on in life.
Absolutely. Just
as we now know from a lot of football players, obviously.
Right. So, like you say, just...
By the way, I have enormous respect for that sport. I love that sport. I'm a huge football fan. Huge. But I can see when those guys go at each other, holy shit.
Yeah.
Obviously, there are a lot of injuries and a lot of pain afterwards. There must be.
But before we get out of here, Eric, what's your favorite? Who's your favorite football team right now?
Well, coming from LA, it used to be the Rams and then the Raiders, and they both hightail out of town. So I have not been a fan of either of those teams. For years, I used to root for the 49ers.
Okay.
And now I'm sort of, it goes from season to season. I'm a big fan of Peyton Manning's.
Yeah.
Primarily because that man had three or four serious neck surgeries.
Oh, wow.
I mean, please think about that for a moment. And then he comes back and plays football and becomes enormously productive. I have such deep respect for that.
Mm-hmm.
I cannot begin to tell you. I find that incredible to come back after neck surgeries.
Yeah, I know,
so
right?
I tend to be now, you know, I'm rooting for the Broncos. But then I see, I mean, you cannot help but root for Brady from the Patriots because that guy was the least likely to succeed.
Yeah.
They did a documentary about him, and they showed him at the NFL Combine, and they said, who the hell wants to hire this guy?
Right.
He wasn't fast, he wasn't strong, he wasn't anything. And look what happened.
Yeah.
I think it's an extraordinary story. It really is. Yeah. I'm not an old friend, but Jim Brown and I used to know each other. I did a film with him called 100 Rifles many, many years ago. And I had enormous respect for Jim Brown. What an athlete, Jesus. And I go back to the old Packers, you know, Ray Nitschke and all these guys, and Jim Brown and Carl Eller from the Minnesota Vikings, Bart Starr, and Kenny Stabler, who played for the Raiders for a while, they called him the Gunslinger. I have such respect for football than Eric Dickerson and Marcus Allen. The fearsome foursome of the LA Rams, you know, from Deacon Jones, who introduced the head slap, you know. He, as soon as they jumped, you know, into the game, he would just head slap his opponent.
Yeah.
And knock him out, practically.
Right.
And Rosie Greer and all those guys. I mean, it's I have enormous respect for the game.
Okay.
Great respect for it.
All right. Listen, Eric.
So I don't have a favorite team right now. It's the 49ers and the Broncos, I would say.
Okay.
You know?
Yeah, 49. You know, 49ers is my team that, you know, I go with, as a matter of fact.
Yeah. I mean, Jerry Rice, what a receiver he was.
Yeah.
My goodness.
Yeah.
What a receiver.
All right.
And now you see, you know, the Seattle Seahawks. I mean, the Richard Sherman guy is incredible.
Mm-hmm.
Wilson is a fantastic quarterback. He's a great quarterback, calm and quick, and can run and throw, and I mean,
or even under pressure.
Yeah. So I just have enormous respect for athletic performance, you know, in whatever field.
That's right. Listen, Eric, it's been an honor talking to you, and you know, I know you are extremely busy, but you know, sometime in the future, it'd be great to have you come back on the show. As a matter of fact, I enjoy talking about politics with you, especially, and you know, there's so many different issues that we should discuss in the future.
Well, there's full of issues, my man.
I'm telling you.
That's. I just wonder now what the Congress is going to do. What? Are they going to pass anything, or are they going to be the no pass anything Congress? You know, what's happened so far.
That's right.
Let's see what happens.
Well, we will, and we'll talk about that as soon as that goes down too. So I'll make sure that I try to get in touch, and we'll talk about it.
There's always something to talk about.
Absolutely.
All right.
Eric, you, what was you about to say?
That's what you're talking about, man.
All right. Same here. Listen, keep doing your thing. Keep doing your thing, Eric. You know it's love all across the world for you, and you've always got a home right here on the Keith Hearn Show. And we would.
Thank you, man.
All right.
The world is improving. Always has. Always has. When you live long enough as I have, the world has improved enormously. But we can still make it better.
A lot to do. All right. Bye-bye.
Thank you very much. Bye.
Thank you. That was Eric Braden, everybody. Wonderful words from an extremely, extremely smart, intelligent, great man who's been around for a real long time. Once again, we thank him for coming through to talk to us today. Big shouts out to Sherman as well. And stay tuned. Don't touch that dial. We're coming up right now with Tanya Atomic right here on the Keith Hearn Show Global Network Hotline Radio.